One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and welcome to the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast. As always, joining me is the effervescent Steve Cording. Steve, how are you?
Effervescent. It's a bit like the weather today, isn't it? I think spring has finally sprung. We got a little bit of a spring in your step this morning.
Well, there was, until I realised it's going to take me quite a long time to get here with the train strikes, but... Yeah, no, we're all good, thank you. Another fascinating weekend of rugby. I was stationed over in Dublin for this weekend, which is never a bad place to be. But I wasn't celebrating an English victory. We'll get on to that shortly. What were you doing over the weekend? Avoiding the football, I would imagine.
Yes, let's not talk football, particularly when our guest comes on later on, because he'll be revelling in that. But no, we had it's bank holiday weekend. As you'd expect, it rained all day Monday. But we were nursing hangovers, having had a marvellous barbecue, actually, on some Kiwi friend of mine, Sean, hosted with his lovely wife, Soph, and we took the kids, and it started at 2 and we watched the rugby and we got home at 11. So it was a great day out, but one of those ones on Monday where you've got the kids and you're trying to keep them occupied and going, look, just leave mummy and daddy alone, we just want to sleep in the front room.
Anyway.
I did see this weekend, congratulations on your nomination, Charles Tyrwhitt Sports Book of the Year Award rugby category.
Yes,
shortlisted.
Yeah, listen, as we know, it's a book that I'm very proud of, and it's made the shortlist for the rugby book of the year.
Any plans to do another one at the moment, or not? Is that it?
No, books are a challenge these days. And listen, I'm very proud of that. Owen Slott was obviously my co-author and very much the driving force behind it. And as I say to people, he wrote it and I colour it in.
Yeah.
Well, let's get on to introducing our special guest, and it's a great privilege and pleasure for me to introduce the one and only Will Greenwood of Leicester and Quins, 55 caps for England with 31 tries, British and Irish Lion, fellow 2003 World Cup winner. Will, good morning, lovely to see you.
Good, we've got a middle-aged T-shirt on, haven't we? T-shirt, jeans. Have you got some Stan Smiths on down below?
I have, actually.
Yeah. So have I. It's de rigueur. Once you hit 50, isn't
hanging,
it?
Hanging on to, trying to hang on to our 40s, aren't we,
that's
really?
That's it. Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Saying it's a privilege, that's a slight exaggeration. It's a pleasure to catch up with you, but you've had far more interesting meets down the years. Who is the most awestruck, starstruck person you've ever been with? Because you've met a lot of people in a lot of great places.
That's a good question.
When did you go? I've got one to set you, give you a bit of time to think. Whoa. Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, nice guy.
I met him, don't know him that well, met him with my missus and said, got introduced. And I turned to Stanley and went, Stanley, this is my friend Caro. I was so Star Trek, I introduced my wife as my friend. So that was my number one.
Well, actually, I know Stanley very well.
He's probably the son.
He's a local, kids went to school and whatever. But outside of Mandela, when I was playing for England on the bench and he was being introduced, probably George Clooney, I'd say. I just sat there in the bar in Italy and,
I had a pee next to him.
Well, we were drinking a lot of cocktails. I don't recall peeing next to him, but you can't even make this stuff up. But this was in Giorgio Armani's house in his flat. It was a party, and we were at the bar, and we sat at the bar for the next 2 or 3 hours. So I was probably thinking, this is very strange. I don't know what I'm doing here.
Mine was a more fleeting experience.
I was lucky enough to meet Muhammad Ali at the Royal Albert.
Whoa! So we've been to Tenerife and you've been to 11 arenas.
It's Laureus Sports Awards. Unfortunately, he was ill then. It was probably about, where are we now? Gosh, I can't even remember what year it was. But he won a Lifetime Achievement Award and came on stage, and we were lucky enough. At the time, I was still a journalist. Went backstage and we had a chat with him. It was just, it was one of those ones where you just go there and you go, what do you say? He's just kind of like, hello, pleased to meet you. And then that was...
I grew up watching Parkey's interviews.
You can still watch them. Amazing, aren't they, really? Mm. Well, that's blown us out of the water, really. But good start, Will. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, that's always interesting to know who someone like you might be... starstruck by.
Do you still watch a lot of rugby, Will? I mean, you obviously broadcast for many, many years, very well indeed. You write for the paper.
Yeah.
But do you still watch as much rugby as you used to?
I love my rugby. I think I went through a stage of sort of 15, 16 years, Sky and Telegraph, where I wouldn't have missed a premiership game. So there was six a weekend, and there were sort of 22, 24... according to how many were in the league, going, you do 6 times 24. You get to the end of the season, you watch 144 premiership games. That's before you start the test matches. Yeah. My view on it was, I've always been a bit of a, not a teacher's pet, but I've always got my work in on time.
Yeah,
I've always been diligent about it. And I took my job seriously enough that if I was going to criticise, the plaudits are easy to do.
Yeah.
But if I was going to criticise a player or a team, then I needed to be able to justify that criticism. And the way I always used it was, or talked about it, it was the mum test, because I think players understand that it comes with the territory, the criticism, but the mums don't. And they're still their little boy or their little girl. And so my mum test would simply be, do I write it or do I say it? I will do if I would write it and say it with their mother sat next to me. And therefore, you have to be able to justify what you're saying and say, I think Lawrence should be dropped this week for X, Y, and Z. And if I know what you're thinking about with your mum.
I'm thinking the mum test is that's pretty extreme.
I'm going to criticise you with your mum, and same with my mum, there are certain individuals that criticised me without really any basis other than a flippant throwaway line. And my mother would now, she's 83, 82, she will take those criticisms to her grave and remember those people for it.
I think,
be careful.
I agree with you. Did you see his post?
Because I was going to ask you about this later, but you've got that letter that somebody anonymously sent you.
Oh, yeah.
Which, I'll read it now, I'll have to bleep out certain words, but it doesn't even say Will, it's addressed Greenwood. You are a effing arrogant arse and too self... I couldn't figure out this. Centrally?
Centeredly.
Oh, centeredly, which I don't think is even a word, is it? Blind to see the harm which your attitude is doing to the game of rugby. Grow up.
Yeah.
And that was...
April the 9th, April. I got it on 2004, and every year I sort of post it.
Wasn't it 2003? Was it the year that you won the World Cup?
Oh, it was 2003, it was 2003.
So just a few months before you won a World Cup, and you get a letter like that was anonymous.
Yeah.
Handwritten, though. Beautifully handwritten.
And you've kept it.
Kept it and framed it. And actually, do you know what I take out of that? You can be blind to these things, and you can ignore them, and you can't. And you have to be able to shut off. But that's his perception, or her.
Could be her
perception of me. And whilst I listen to the people who give me tough love and fair with the feedback but don't pull punches, then I did take an element of it. And sometimes I do check myself and go, just have that let... I do. And it's quite an interesting one that some people would throw it away and never look at it. I've framed it for a bit of a laugh, but also just a little reminder that at times in my career I was viewed... I mean, I've still got bleached hair now, that I was some sort of peroxide blonde champagne drinking pink shirt wearing Harlequin who deserved everything that came to him. And I know Lol would have had those thoughts when Wasp played Quinns a couple of times.
I mean, listen, 31 tries in 55 games for England would suggest otherwise.
Is it time to own up now to the fact that you sent that letter or not?
when you said really good handwriting, I thought it might just be me, actually. But then everyone said
it was either Clive or Austin.
Well, you talk about watching all those games. I mean, do you miss it now? Do you want to get back? You must get offers from people to come back and do more coverage.
Years. I'm sort of a... cut in half and I'm sort of SKY and we don't have much rugby. We'll be doing the summer tests. I'm really looking forward to working on the England-New Zealand, couple of tests down there. And then after that, we've got the Lions the following year. So I still get the opportunity with, you're an owner of the Green Room.
Mm. Yeah.
So I go to Twickenham games, and with England Rugby Travel, I'll go to most of the World Cup games. There are times when it's European semi-final week, like this weekend has just taken place, and I'm going, I did 10, 11 years of that. and the semi-final. Quarter-finals were always my favourite weekend because of the four games, there was always one crazy result, crazy upset. Semi-finals, slightly more predictable, but still, semi-finals moves to huge stadiums, and I've been in some amazing places down the years and I've been so lucky. So, yes, I do miss it. Occasionally, I wouldn't necessarily be that keen to do Newcastle Gloucester on a Friday night in December.
No,
so similar to the way you played it, we weren't really that keen.
But I did all those.
Yeah.
So I sort of feel like I've earned my stripes to be able to pick and choose a couple of the big ones.
And I think your diary's probably busy enough anyway, isn't it, with other things going on?
Yeah, it's busy enough. I work for an AI business now, and I've been doing it for about 10 years. So
still lots on the charity front as well.
Born is our baby charity that we support for Mark Johnson. My missus just started a podcast, fascinating podcast, with the lady from Scummy Mummies and Professor Mark Johnson, and it's B-O-R-N-E. And if you're a young mum or a young dad or a young wannabe mum or dad, or you've been through some, you know, some pretty tough times with pregnancy, then I recommend it as an incredible listen with a couple of mums who've really done it tough, and a professor who is at the tip of the spear when it comes to obstetrics and gynaecology.
Well, listen, because we knew that you only really focus now on the real creme de la creme of rugby, we've brought you in for your helicopter view of the Investec Champions Cup semi-finals, which was, I thought, two spectacular games, really. I was fortunate enough to be in Dublin, but I watched both games with interest. I don't think any of us, had we at the beginning of the competition been asked to pick the semi-finals lineup, we might have said Leinster. In fact, we probably would have done.
Yeah.
We probably would have said Toulouse. I'm not sure we'd have mentioned Saints and Quins.
No.
So I don't think necessarily any of us expected them to win. But as you know, in these... You know, in these competitions, anything can happen, and anything nearly did happen, really.
Yeah.
What was your take on the Quins game, if we start with that one?
Quins game was everything I think Quins probably wanted it to be. You know, it's quite interesting listening to Andros Townsend last night about Luton and where they are. They're 3 points behind with two games to go. If you'd offered that to them at the start of the season, he said they'd bite your hand off to give themselves a chance of staying in the Premier League. So the reason I'd contextualise that, if you said to Quins it's going to be 31-26 on the scoreboard with 65 minutes on the clock, the game sort of played out beautifully for Quins. I felt they wanted a 70-80 pointer. They needed it to be fast and loose. I know Cost and Co in the midfield are getting a huge amount of plaudits, but that's with Labelle and Malia, who scored on the other wing, Kinghorn's new to it. You felt that they've got incredible attacking threat, but Toulouse can concede and can concede 7, 12, 14 points super fast. So I thought the game played out perfectly for them, and then a yellow card and then an immediate try, and 38-26 just took it away from them. But
I mean, it was 5-4, wasn't it? And Quins are synonymous with that kind of game. You know,
the scrum was awesome. Yeah. It's great to see Finn Baxter doing so well. I thought Chandler Cunningham South's reputation is being enhanced every game he plays at that level. Their line-out was a weakness. Rumour and Flamel just went to town on them a little bit, which took that foothold away from them. I thought the breakdown at times, both winning teams were super aggressive at the breakdown. Where else? I mean, I've scribbled some notes. Cross is just a player you want in your team. He'll tackle a rampaging buffalo, and he's a Richard Hill, right? He's not glamorous. He's not fancy. He just gets everything done, picks up the bits and pieces. Dupont is crazy good. I mean, crazy good. I thought Ontemat brought a whole heap of control. But from an English perspective, 31-12 down at half time, two great tries to come back. They wrestled control. They'd sorted the breakdown out. I felt in the build-up to the yellow card, I felt it was a Quins pen. I don't want to go into the minutiae. Some of the decisions, I thought, actually,
I think quite a few of the decisions were that they seem to, listen, there's no sour grapes, because I think, you know, you look at it, but when you're playing away from home, those decisions often go against you. And the same could be said the other way around. I mean, that's part of what home advantage is, you know. Referees are human. And that crowd is a big crowd.
Yep.
And, you know, I just thought there were some interesting calls
The TMO is at the behest of the local producer, isn't he? So if he doesn't show the replay, then the TMO doesn't see it. I didn't even realise that the TMO doesn't have his own feed. The only ones who have their own feed is during the World Cup. So.
Yeah, as Will said, the game was in the balance, and probably what swung it was a yellow card, then the try. I mean, you could argue if you're Quins, you can't let Toulouse come out the blocks that quickly and get that many points early, because then you're giving, even by their standards, you're giving yourself a mountain to climb. Being impartial, and I completely was, just wanted to watch great rugby. I thought the, was it Kinghorn was in front for DuPont's try, and, you know, we only got one angle of that, and it wasn't replayed, you know. Whereas for the yellow card for Jack Walker, there seems to be five or six replays. So, you know, you can argue all you like. The French TV director obviously lives not too far from Toulouse. That's the way it goes.
So I'd never pick a fight. I mean, I've been watched both games on the telly where I've got the ability to stop, rewind, and look at a couple of things. I sort of removed the ref from both these games and think he was consistent with both sides.
Agreed.
I think often when you're looking at it in the heat of the moment, you go, oh. So anyway, enough on refs. Back to Toulouse, their ability to bring on Ramos, Arnold, Marchand, that squad depth is crazy good. Yeah. Unsung players within Toulouse's team, Aki just holds the midfield together. Thought absolutely outstanding.
Interesting to see Jack Willis there as the number one choice now in their team. When he arrived, obviously, it's always quite interesting. You know, you arrive and he was there on a short-term contract. He was very much, you know, he was playing in all the away games in the top 14, etc. But he's forced his way into that team. He's won a title now with them. They seem to have accepted him. And he's, along with Kroos and Rumo, he's the number one choice in the back row. And it's an amazing journey for him as well.
And what a wonderful, I think more important, life's about experiences, right? Yeah. What a wonderful experience for him. I never got the opportunity to play away in France. I got offered late on in my career, but by that time I was held together by Band-Aid. I don't think you want to go to France if you're not fit.
No.
Because I think you get chewed up,
not as an Englishman,
and sent back across the channel going, you've robbed us there.
And
so,
was the money then as lucrative as it potentially is now or not?
No. What are we looking at? Probably about £170,000-£180,000. So nothing to be sniffed at, but not the sort of $750,000 that's been bandied about if you're going to go over there as a flagship player. Quins still can score tries from anything. I thought they can look back on the weekend and have less regrets than Northampton. I think the first half for Northampton, the great physicality, the scrum, I thought they're amazingly, I thought everyone's talking about Northampton's backs. I thought Northampton's pack went toe-to-toe with Leinster's. I thought Coles is filling out. Moon, they'll be gutted to lose him at 27 years old to go to France. Laws seems like he's as good as he's ever been.
Yeah, unflappable.
And the front row, Davidson at three and Langdon, they really matched the physicality. The frustrating thing was the accuracy of hands for which they are known let them down, and it wasn't one individual. You can go through and go Mitchell, Smith, Dingwalls, Freemans, Furbank, all made an error with the ball that coughed it up, that didn't allow Northampton to apply any pressure, get any tempo, which was a release for Leinster when Northampton did have the ball, made it too easy, go up the other end. Jameson Gibson-Park is an outstanding rugby footballer. And at, what was it, 20 points to three?
Yeah.
Do you know what, Will? I just thought they were nervous. When you go into a big game, and we're lucky enough to have played in quite a few, but when it's your first ever big game, you want lots of people around you to have played in those big games just to reassure you a little bit, or some people around you. Now, they've got Courtney, but they haven't got many more. And I just felt you could talk about what the semi-final is going to be like. Don't forget Croke Park, 82,500. You know, that's normal for that Leinster team. That I think they're the most inexperienced players, probably got about 30 caps. So I just felt that they were overawed by the occasion to start with.
Yeah.
And when we spoke to Sam Vesti, actually in commentary, it was really refreshing because he just said, you know, we've had a shaky start, we're a bit nervous, but, you know, what we have got in this group is a team that won't panic. He said they'll stay calm. And actually, that's exactly what played out.
Yeah. But
you just think to yourself, you know, 9 handling errors, 6 penalties in the opening 25 minutes of the game. If you take that inaccuracy out and replace it with what you know, even half that number, they win the game. And I was so impressed with how they didn't...
Or the game plays out slightly differently and Leinster get asked... Tougher questions.
Because Leinster's first two tries, let's face it, were both all off of Northampton's mistakes. And I just felt that they, as you said, they'll look back on that and think, my word,
you've got to take the first 5 years out of any competition because someone's going to win it for a first time. once a competition is matured, like the Champions Cup is now, being a first-time sort of winner, as in someone who makes knockout stages for the first time and breaking, goes right through and it, yeah, wins it, is so rare. It's like winning the Masters first time out. I think there have been five of them.
Yeah,
well, it's like the Champions League in football as well.
Yeah,
you know,
you wonder why the same name. It took Saracens, who've won two or three. I'm not sure how many trophies they won, but they were quarterfinals, they were semi-finals, they lost the final. Clermont could never make the final step. You looked at La Rochelle, they were on the fringe, they were making quarters, they made semis, bang, gone. Northampton would be one of those, so they will look back at the tapes and go, ah. But it's often a natural flow to a team. To reach the summit, they've got to get to the sort of death zone, fail, go back down the mountain, and go again and be better prepared for it.
Yeah, and you're right. Maybe if they win their own domestic competition, which they've got every chance of doing,
yeah,
that they'll, you know, that you get that experience of being in those big games on a regular basis. I mean, it's a fitting final, Will, isn't it?
I mean, yeah. So I backed. I mean, a gambler only tells you his winning bets, right? But I backed to lose at sort of 9-2 before the tournament started. And I've got, you know, you can cash out now and take it. It's not a huge bet, but I'm going to let it ride.
Yeah. I mean, they're the two most decorated European champions, aren't they?
Yes.
Six and five stars?
Five and four.
First
race to six. You're right. I think we don't like predictability in sport, but what we've got is a magnificent final between two international rugby teams.
Just to wrap up on the English teams, I mean, a lot's been made today about what can they do to take that next step. I mean, just touching on what you were talking about before, they're not actually that far away, are they? I mean, there's a lot being made of, well, salary caps, a huge difference, depth of squad. But both those games, we could be looking at an all-English final, and we're not. So it's not like they're a million miles away, are they?
No, and it sounds like gallows humour, but the best thing that happened to England was we got rid of some clubs, and we've gotten a smaller amount of club size now. I don't want to I'm sad that obviously those clubs were. But what we've seen is a joining together of the top players in a more concentrated basis, and the best of the best, some really good players from Wasps, from an Irish, from Worcester, have gone and joined teams and bolstered them, because I still believe in the play in England, play for England. And so a lot of players, quite rightly, have decided to go elsewhere, and life experiences, and at the back end of the year, taken some money. But actually to see players like Ollie Lawrence, Ted Hills, these sorts of characters move away from a Worcester and go and join sort of another collection of decent English players. And I think that's really helped. So that's looking back on it. Moving forward, like, I love the way that both Quins and Saints play the game. Bath aren't going to take a backward step now from that perspective. And they go play, they go roll the dice. And I think there's a mood within world rugby and the way the referees are refereeing the game that will reward positive play. So I think we double down on that. And I would expect to see one or two English teams knocking bells out of each other in the back end of the tournament next year as well.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
So you think it's right then that English qualified players that move abroad don't play for England?
Yeah, I do. But I'm also, I understand there's nuance, and it's you've asked me a straight up yes or no answer, and I've gone yes, I do. I think there's a massive
for what reason though?
Because basically talking about what I've alluded to there, in that I want more English players playing together more often. in a smaller collective. An understanding that the physicality of it, yes, it's moved on since sports science has taken over, but the top World Cup sides are the genetically gifted South Africans and Kiwis. So therefore, the more time we can spend together playing rugby and understanding the ability of... I know Lol wants to go out and he's got that good one left, right. I know where Mike Tindall wants to go defensively because I played with him and those sorts of things. But by the way, this is just my opinion. And I get no. it. There are many counter arguments. It would just send them away. Be Jack Willis. Look at him now. What an amazing player he is now. That's my view. You play in England to play for England. You keep control of the players. It's a strong argument.
I just feel that, you know, in the current landscape, you're asking players, you know, yes, you can label it as life experiences, but you're actually asking players to choose between financial security and international rugby. Well, and that's not fair, because when you're offered significantly more than you and I were offered to go and play abroad, and you can no longer play for England because of that, I don't think that's a very fair choice to have to ask a player to make, because no player does not want to play for his country.
But, well, you do if you leave. Yeah, you know the rules.
But it's financial, and therefore, you know, no player doesn't want to safeguard the future of their wives and children. So in South Africa, the choice is very simple, because the currency's fallen out of the market.
Yeah.
You know, that choice is away. If the pound was even lower than it is now, would you still have that view? Would you still say that stay here and earn, you know, 50 grand a year? Where, you know, but don't worry, you can play for your country if you're picked. You know, listen, you and I didn't leave because week in, week out, I wanted to play against the best English players and show that I was the best player to get picked for England.
Yeah.
But I think that argument, I'm not sure, sits very comfortably anymore.
Is the onus becoming more and more on the RFU to sort out these hybrid contracts? Because if you look, to your point, the Ireland team, they will play in Ireland. So it's like, well, if we can sort that out and we can get the best English players playing in England because they are getting rewarded financially, then they'll stay.
That's a valid point.
But I think... there are valid points on both sides. I think at some stage, though, if you're on a council, you have to vote on it. If you're at the RFU, you have to vote on it. And it's clear in here that Lol and I, who've had some amazing experiences, would have a difference of opinion on it. But I was in your camp until
I realised the financial gap that exists with top-class players choosing one or the other. I'm 100%. I'm what makes English a stronger league. 100%. Until I suddenly had a conversation with a few players and they're saying to me, look at the difference. And it's not, you know, it's not me being greedy financially. Yeah. This is just the reality of what it is.
Can you look at it slightly differently and go, once we're central contracts? I mean, again, this is looking further into the future.
Maybe the hybrid
contracts, then you're suddenly only playing 16, 17 games and you play a couple of years extra.
I would take the view that if somewhere in between, I'd stay for a lot less, you know.
Yeah.
Because I want to play for England, but not that much.
Here's an instance. So even though you have that argument, let's say the rule is in place and it is stayed. What would you say to a 23, 24-year-old who's thinking of having his head turned by €600,000 as opposed to only being guaranteed 250, 300, but if he plays for England, he gets 25 bags a game. Back yourself, get 8 games, you're up to 500 and you've stayed. So what do you say? You're an agent.
Well, I'd always, as a young player, I'd always want to play for England first, build your career, and then you'll get the paycheck at the end of it. I wouldn't like to do it the other way around and go, I'm just going to get, you know, go and do that and then think I can, you know, come back and get into a team. I'd always push England and always keep them to stay early.
Yeah.
A player gets to 27, hasn't been capped that much. Like the lock you mentioned from Northampton, Coles.
Moon.
You know, and the opportunities are slightly different.
I think the answer is what you support, which is sabbaticals, which is let the players go for a year, earn the money, then you can still come back.
I think Maritoji should have gone to Japan for a season after the World Cup, because he's, you know, he was blown out, whatever he was.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there's no reason why sensible conversations can't take place.
But just so on the sabbaticals, right, they're not going to play for England in that sabbatical year, are they? They can have a year off and rest. Yeah. So my point being is, go for a sabbatical now. Just make self-imposed sabbatical. You don't have to tell, someone doesn't have to tell you you can have a sabbatical. If you're a really good player, you can go to Japan now for a year, and if you're still a really good player, they'd be biting your hand off when you come back. Why has someone got to say, have a sabbatical,
because
Steve.
They're not, because
when you're at 25, 26, you're exhausted, you could go, by the way, I'm going to Japan for a year. I'm going to state my intentions clearly. I'm going to go for a year, 18 months. I'm going to make a bucket full of cash. I'll have a great time. I'll have a life experience. Then I'm going to come back in 2026 after the Lions, because I'll probably miss the Lions. I'm going to go gung-ho. I'm going to play in the World Cup in 2026. No one has to go award you a sabbatical.
There's nothing stopping you.
You do it yourself.
But if the contract, if it's a hybrid contract, you're talking about the duty of care and the ownership of the player, then it becomes not just individual decision, it's a collective
once
decision.
Once those have been in place. But currently, there's nothing that stops. So, for example, Farrell, a few years younger, and by the way, he's not ruled out of 2027.
No,
he's sort of doing a self-imposed
sabbatical.
Mm.
I just said that more and more players should do it.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't rely on their club. The clubs, as you realise when you finish your career, they like you, but they're not there to encourage you to go and play somewhere else. You've got to do it yourself.
I think the challenge with the hybrid contracts, though, is the less time that players will play for their clubs, isn't it? Clubs in England want their best players playing. They don't want them not playing because they're on these hybrid contracts.
No, but what you've seen already this season is, because of the number of games that are being played and the intensity that we're talking about, all the players are condensed into individual clubs. Every game is a tough game. They're actually rotating their squads more than I've ever seen in any season I've ever watched. Yes, of course, you've always got to have your go-to 15, starting 15, if everyone's fit and available. But Northampton being a classic example, when they came down to Quinns the other day at the big summer kickoff, they rotated their team because I think there's an ability to look at the depth of a squad now in England and say, well, we've got to be able to trust the group rather than just pick the same guys like we used to just get wheeled out every single week, even if you're 60, 70% fit.
Yeah.
Because I know you can cope with it nowadays. Just on the Premiership then, Will, obviously, you know, both of those teams that have just lost at the weekend, Saints and Quinns, are now coming back into, you know, and they've got to try and kind of, you know, drown their sorrows and make sure that they get straight back into it. Saints in a slightly easier position. Quinns really have probably got to win both games, haven't they? They're at Exeter on Saturday, and I'll be down at Sandy Park. And then I think they host Bristol last game of the season. I mean, there is still, I think, right down to Sale, who are seventh.
Extra seventh. Sorry, I'm cheating. Sorry, I've pulled up the charts.
Then. Listen, there's a few teams that can still qualify. Sorry, Sale are sixth, aren't they?
Yes.
And Sale play Leicester at home on Friday night.
Yeah. Home win.
You know, could be a home win, could be 5 points.
Yeah.
Tom Curry back for that, apparently. You know,
well, that's great news. Bath are obviously away to Newcastle, could pick up 5 points, go to 55 points. I mean, it's such an incredibly close run-in. I mean,
it is. Look, I think the two, no one's guaranteed. So the reality is, I think Northampton and Saracens, you're probably getting close to putting your house on to making top four. After that, good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck picking the last. You've really got to go through and work out who you think's going to beat who on one given day.
Well, Bristol Saris is a huge game, by the way, as well. I mean, because Saris will want to, you know, get it done, so to speak, early.
Who does Saris have on the last game of the season?
A Sale home.
So I see Saracens getting a win and some. They'll get a couple of points at Bristol minimum, because it's going to be 50. Bristol are going to want to make it. They kicked the ball four times a couple of weeks ago, so they're going to want to make it 55 points to 52. And Saracens will go, do you know what? If we come out the wrong side of that with 52 points and get 2 points,
well, as they did at Northampton,
which puts them in great shape. So look, I haven't got the algorithm out at the moment, but Northampton Saris is to both be at home, so therefore it's a Northampton Saris final, because both will win their home.
Did you have a similar wager with the bookies on the Premiership at the beginning of the season?
I went Saris.
Yeah.
Before.
Yeah. Well, it's a safe bet, that, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
We should mention Gloucester, who have reached the final.
Yeah.
You're looking for two trophies.
That's an interesting one. So, ninth in the league, but they're in two final. Well, they've won a trophy already, Prem Cup. They could win the Challenge Cup. Two trophies, would that be
the shed? Yeah, 100%.
Hugely successful.
Oh, massive,
season.
Massive. And also, that's a route to Europe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's back into the Champions Cup if they win
huge.
It.
Which, and it's obviously at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium as well.
Yeah. Is it a Friday night, Saturday night combo?
It is. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Just quickly, Will, because we've been through everything, but memories from your career. You're at Quinns, then you had 150 odd games at Leicester, and then you went back to Quinns. England, British and Irish Lions, obviously the 97 tour that we went on together was pretty special. England memories, I can remember you scoring a hat-trick at the Millennium Stadium. I don't think that had much to do with the pack that day.
It's always, is it my mindset? People will have different memories. The ones that still irritate me are the ones that got away. I dug out the old Brieve shirt from the final in 97. Von der Tee, I swapped shirts with him at Leicester. You know, I never won a European Cup, lost a final, which is always like...
We lost the quarter final against Brieve. Never lost that one either.
That's annoying. It's Australia next year in the Lions, and I'll always remember the New South Wales game tearing all my ankle ligaments week before the first test. And I know we both had pretty tough times with Lions.
You and I were sat next to each other watching that test. And,
yeah, staying fit on, like, people underestimate an element of luck that's required to end up. Obviously, you have to be one of the best players ever to get played in a test series where you win. You just need an element of luck. So look back on those. In terms of our England games, the one that still irritates me is probably Paris quarterfinal against South Africa. It was just like, oh my God, it's men against boys here. You might then look at it and go, well, actually, it did you a favour, because you realised unless you get Dave Redding in and sort yourself out off the field,
I think we were a long way away. I mean, don't forget, I know it's an easy thing to say, South Africa obviously tactically were strong, but we played a game on the Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
We played a repargé game against Fiji, and Fiji were a very good side. So we had to put our strongest team out on the Wednesday before the quarterfinal in Paris on the Sunday. So don't make out that it was all our fault. They'd had a week's rest. Can you imagine playing a test match against Fiji on Wednesday and then the same team have to travel to Paris on Thursday, no recovery or little recovery, and then run out on Sunday?
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy.
But then, look, positive, positive, positive. I think the three-game stretch that went Ireland in Dublin, New Zealand in Wellington, Australia in Melbourne.
That was fun.
When Aussies were a proper side, to go away, 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 to Australia were the World Cup holders at the time. I think that three ball, that trifecta, are moments where you just go, we were properly decent.
Because away from home is always the, you know, the true
litmus
mark.
Test.
And actually, you know, winning in New Zealand is probably the summit, as is winning in South Africa, really. And if you can tick those two things off your resume, then you can retire pretty happy in a game of rugby, really.
And that was that 3 months after you were called a effing arrogant arse by somebody.
Yeah, yes, we've gone full circle, haven't we? anyway, they took the time to write that letter, right? They obviously love their rugby. If they are listening,
oh yeah,
I would love to chat about it, because I think you've actually had a positive impact.
Was there a postmark on it? Did you keep that?
I didn't keep the envelope. That's the foolish thing.
I've just didn't go for forensics, no.
No, I get far too neat a writing to be Clive. I thought at one stage it was a bit of reverse psychology, keep us on the floor. But anyway,
now, well, just finally, you've got your in your AI job. You're working very hard. You've got, you know, still involved in rugby. You've always kept a hand in with Maidenhead.
Yeah,
you know, you played a little bit post rugby. You know, let's be honest, you were the brains of the England back line. You were the one that, you know, the eyes and the ears, and also the brains, the coaching side of it. And I've said this a lot, all the players you played in 2003, very few of that the intellectual property within that group was pretty special, I think, in terms of not just technical sides of the game. I think the mental aspects of the game, belief, I think we had all bases covered. So few of that group have moved into coaching.
Yeah.
Some have not enjoyed it and come out, but there's very few. Mike Capp, maybe Trevor Woodman being the only couple that are still kind of there.
Richard Hill with England on the
management side, but not sure how much actual...
But they are if you dropped a huge ball.
Yeah.
With us, or England rugby, however it's called. There was no reaching out to go, by the way, I don't know if you've got a job. I don't know what you're going to do post-career, but we'd be quite interested to keep you in the bloodstream, to keep you close and to give you an opportunity and support you. Doesn't mean it'll guarantee you success. There's no woe is me here, by the way, because we've gone off and sorted ourselves out and you crack on.
But would you have done it if they'd have come to you and
100%.
Said?
You'd have had to seriously consider it. And I still think there's opportunities there. And I think there's a whole generation of players who were so invested in English rugby, and not one of them have been taken forward and given the opportunity, really.
Yeah, so I'm, what am I, 51? Are you 51, Lol?
Yeah.
Stan
Smith.
I've gone back to the T-shirt and Stan Smith. I have increasingly thought about rolling the dice and having a go. It's quite interesting, I'm not quite sure where to start.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. But I mean, you know, you get help with that, don't you? With a proper pathway around you.
Yeah, so that's fascinating. So you're actually now thinking that, is that because you want to give something back?
No, look, I coach Tuesday, Thursday at level 5 and go in and do coaching camps. So I love working with people who want to be slightly better rugby players. I love the mental health and physical health I get out of a Tuesday and Thursday night. It keeps me off the pop. My missus knows where I am. I think a rugby club's a great place to spend time.
Well, you've started already. You don't.
But I've been doing that for 10 years now and absolutely love it. I suppose, and you're always careful to say things like this, do I believe I could make a player at international level better? I do believe I could make a player and a backline better, but that's for me to say, right, someone's going to say, well, prove it, go and do it. But life gets in the way, work gets in the way, and you're not quite sure where the first step goes, who takes the first lead. So I don't think I'm at the decision day yet, but it's close to at 51. Mm. If you're going to go in and have a go, it's close to.
I had a good season, Maidenhead, this season.
Back end of the season, we're great. Mm. We've got a hell of a backline. I mean, hell of a backline. And Alex Turton on the wing and Greg Smith at 10, names that mean nothing to you. Harry Wells at 13, he's like me. He makes everyone else look quick, but what a baller.
If he turns sideways, he disappears as well, doesn't
Correct.
He?
Correct, absolutely. He's literally a doppelganger. He's a big, crazy giraffe who's worked a J-line on a swing.
So you said, what a hell of a backline, but that forward pack, if only they gave us a bit more ball.
Well, our second row is a 5 foot 10, lol.
Okay. Well, listen, I mean, I'm more than welcome to come in and do some work.
I mean, this is a blatant
I'm very
plan.
Happy to come and do some work with the pack.
Any second rows in the Berkshire Buckinghamshire area who want to join a decent club and have fun, we can't pay you. Any front five lads, if you're listening to this, mate, we'll have some fun. I'll give you private tuition. You can play at Sunningdale every now and again as well if you like your golf. We have ways and means of getting round the salary cap by giving you good experiences.
Well, we talk all day.
As always, you know, you've been an absolute delight, Will, to speak to.
Thanks, Ken.
Very excited about your future coaching career. Give us a call if you need someone.
Give us the exclusive
To help you out with the forwards at Maidenhead.
It's a nice opportunity to get my old notes out and adding. I take my notes on the game still.
I can't stretch them on the rack from 5'8" to 6'4", but we'll do
we
something.
We need a bit of mongrel.
Yeah, well, exactly.
There we go. Does anyone know anyone around here who could coach a bit of mongrel? Lol, when we start next week.
Okay, well, listen, you got my number. There you go. The dream team. Will, thanks very much indeed.
Pleasure.
Joining us now is the Evening Standard rugby correspondent, Nick Purriwell. Nick, how are you? How was your bank holiday weekend?
All good, thank you very much. Yeah, how about you?
Yeah, very good. Very good indeed, thank you. So we're going to look ahead to this weekend's matches. Sale against Leicester on Friday night to kick us off. Lowell's going up to that game. Tom Curry potentially back. Which way do you think that will go?
Yes, it's probably Sale going to win that. I think desperate for it, home, they're good at home. I think Leicester are in a bit of a funk. And I'd expect Sale to win that.
And then Newcastle-Bath, Lawrence, which way is that one going to go? I mean, Newcastle still looking for their first win.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Bath are in a good place at the moment. You know, no one wants to be that team that loses to Newcastle for a start, but particularly not when you're Bath and you've worked so, so hard to get yourself in the position they're in. I thought they were a little bit unlucky to lose at home to Saracens. And when you looked at the run-in, you always thought, well, Bath have got this game. I can't see them not winning this game and not winning it with a bonus point, getting themselves from where they are in third on 50 points up to probably 55. And look, Bath are going to push all the way. I do feel with their remaining fixtures, I think they play Northampton at home on the last game of the season, because you have to look at these fixtures in almost in pairs, really. I think that they would put themselves in a great position to be able to secure a home playoff semi-final. So,
yeah, and Saracens are at Bristol on Saturday. Nick, do you think Saracens, Northampton also playing at Gloucester, are they going to be the top two come the end of the season?
I think after everything that's happened in the last couple of weeks, Saracens definitely need that to be the case. They've always had this attitude of work hard, play hard, and it's always stood to them very well in the past. But with the issue of what's happened with Billy Vunipola, I think they really need to pull that out of the fire now and justify that kind of approach. It's only one mistake, and it's not the biggest mistake in the world. And I think, obviously, Billy will come back, and he's obviously probably got the chance to end his Saracens career in the way he wants to, which would be a great thing all round. But then I think they need to vindicate how they approach these things and, yeah, secure that top two finish. And I think they will, because I think they're very confident about coming into the back end of the season in peak fitness and condition And if they're really dialed in and focused, then they are still one of the best teams around.
So the last game on Saturday is a 5:30 kickoff down at Sandy Park, Exeter against Quins. Nick, do you think there'll be a hangover for Quins after losing to Toulouse at the weekend?
Yes, probably. But I think that's partly why they've probably had a few days off this week and just given the opportunity for some players to get a bit of headspace and just freshen up. I think you get to the stage of the season now where it isn't a time where people need to do an awful lot on the training pitches. It's just in the top 2 inches, as they always talk about. And I think Quins were so close and they've done magnificently well. But this is the bread and butter. This is where they need to really come through, because anything that they would have done in Europe, especially away to Toulouse, would have been a bonus. But really, the top four is really where they want to be. They're definitely good enough for it, but certainly to go down to Exeter, it's a very difficult fixture. But if they pull off an away win, which they could do, then they'll be in a very strong position.
Nick, are you at a game this weekend, Nick?
Fulham-Man City count?
Fulham-Man City, that's not a bad game to go to.
Don't mention the football. We've gone so well. Steve, when you said to him, have you had a nice weekend, Steve? He forgot to mention the bank holiday Monday, really, where he's had a terrible weekend. But
it was that bad, I turned over and watched the snooker.
And Nick, we are obviously we have no bias here, but the mighty Gloucester made it into the Challenge Cup final, a win against Benetton, and they play the Sharks in the final, going for their second trophy, Gloucester. So they could end up the season with two trophies and ninth in the Prem, which would, I guess, constitute quite a successful season for George Givington and his men.
And I think Gloucester are in a bit of a rebuilding phase, aren't they? And the investment hasn't been what it once was in the past, but the owner, Martin St. Quinton, has been very clear all along about the need for sustainability. And I think there's some quite realistic Gloucester fans there who understand that for such a community institution, it's vitally important that it continues to be a going concern. And so while they might not be where they once were when you had Dean Ryan in charge and a squad full of 55 senior players and 25 full internationals, they're still going, they're still there, still alive and kicking and doing very, very well, and a very dangerous cup team. So you've got to think that if they can bring everything together and just add an extra bit of focus, they might just get over the line.
Brilliant. Well, enjoy the cottage, Nick. It's still a lovely ground to go to, isn't it? It's probably got one of the best walks, I would say, from the station along the river. Nice pint in the Eight Bells before you get there.
All right.
We'll catch up with you next week. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, guys.
Well, that's all for this week. And my thanks to the irrepressible Will Greenwood and the effervescent Steve Cording.
Spell it.
Nick Puruel. And, of course, to VoxPod Studios. We'll be back next week for more Premiership action. Until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.